Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, May 6th. I'm Ray Graff. Our favorite bird experts are back. Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart are here to share their birding knowledge with you. You got a birding question? Call us. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. This is usually a popular show, so my advice is call early. 800-348-2551. Or you can email us, voxpop@wamc.org. Try to avoid sending photos. Nobody listening at home can see them. But the email address, again, is voxpop@wamc.org. It's Julie Hart. It's Rich Guthrie. And you and the Boyds coming up after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We're discussing birds today with Julie Hart and Rich Guthrie. Rich is back in the studio for the first time in a while, and he looks like it's brand new to him. But he's got his headphones on now, right at the last minute. The mic's in place. Julie Hart has served as the project coordinator of the New York State, the New York Breeding Bird Atlas. She coordinates with thousands of volunteers to document bird breeding behaviors. She has a focus on bird conservation and citizen science. Rich is retired from the New York State DEC. He's now the regional reviewer for the premier birding site, eBird. He is a traveler. Man, it's rare to see. It's rarer than seeing a dodo bird here in the studio to see him live. But he's here. The number is 800-34. I didn't mean to call you dodo bird. The number is 800-348-2551. And the email address is voxpop@wamc.org. All right. Since you now remembered the ropes, how have you been? What's going on?
Pretty darn good, Ray.
What's happening,
I'm
man?
I'm back.
So you traveled everywhere, right?
Well, I've been around, yes.
Yeah.
I did the southern coast tour this winter.
What's the coolest, most rare bird you saw on your travels?
Well, I'd have to say, you know, undoubtedly would be the whooping crane. That's
cool. You know,
yeah, down there in Florida, there's a small contingent down there, as well as a group over there in Aransas National Wildlife Refuge in Texas.
Neato.
Yes, so neato.
How many states did you hit?
I think it was 19 or thereabouts.
Yeah. Good for you. That's a lot of driving.
It was actually, I love it. I mean, I get out on the open road and just kind of like be with, and never, as much as I can, not the interstates. I do the double-digit highways.
Do you get the CB radio? That's Big Ten 4. Looks like we got us convoy.
Negatory.
No?
No, I try to keep the distractions to a minimum.
Okay, fair enough. The number here is 800-348-2551. Julie Hart, what's new with you?
Oh, I've been enjoying all of the migratory birds that are arriving lately. There's so many warblers and flycatchers, and just it's like super exciting right now.
It is a great time. Yeah. I mean, it's just you go out in the backyard, and it's incredible. I heard you and Rich discussing hummingbirds before the show began, and Rick wrote in, what do you think is the best hummingbird food, the sugar and water recipe, or do you recommend a more specific recipe?
I go with the sugar and water.
Yeah.
Keep it simple. It works. They appreciate it, and they got plenty of other options for the rest of their dietary needs.
Well, what would their other dietary needs be?
Bugs, for the most part.
Yeah.
You know, those tiny little things that annoy you right in front of your eyes when you're walking around. Gnats and the like.
Fair enough. Number here is 800-348-2551. Julie Hart, what is a rarish bird that has been in your backyard this week?
Ooh.
In the last week or two. I mean, they're coming through now, right?
They're coming through, yeah. So we've had Veery and Scarlet Tanager and Great Crested Flycatcher and some other birds that...
I heard you mention the Cape May Warbler.
At Cape May, we had while we were birding at Five Rivers. That's a good place for Five Rivers. I don't think we've had that in our yard yet.
What does that sound like?
Oh, it's super high-pitched,
really?
Squeaky thing. Yeah,
yeah, it's a very distinctive but very hard to hear high-pitched song all on one note.
Really?
Yeah.
So theoretically, you would get some undertones when it's making the consonant sound, right? In other words, even if your hearing is not like my high-end hearing is shot, basically. So I may not hear that, but would you hear a click?
No. You're not going to hear it. I don't hear it. But I do
anything.
Use my Merlin app, and that hears it. And then it says Cape May Warbler up there in that fir tree.
So
sure enough.
Now, the app will tell you which direction?
No.
No.
But I know that it likes fir trees and spruce trees because it's a coniferous habitat species bird.
That would be an interesting addition to the app. If you were able to network it with a second phone, you could triangulate.
Good luck with that.
Now you're getting complicated.
Yes. Our number here is 800-348-2551. It's Birds Today. Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart join us to discuss the same. And I heard one of you mention bunting. What's the deal?
Well, one of our listeners out in Cobleskill had a very rare in our area, a beautiful, resplendently beautiful painted bunting show up at his bird feeder in his backyard. And, you know, that's the benefit of networking, getting information out and having information come back in.
Yeah.
And if anybody's interested in knowing about it, please email me at my email address, and I'll share the details.
You'll give the listener's address to random people who ask you.
Oh, absolutely. I have no problem.
Really?
No.
What about that guy? Is he going to be okay with that?
Oh, he's my address.
And oh, it's at your house?
Yes, yes. No, my email address for information.
Right. But what if the guy doesn't want to? He might want you there, but what if he doesn't want a bunch of people hanging out?
I take care of that.
So what kind of bunting is this?
It's a painted bunting. Painted bunting is very closely related to our beautiful indigo bunting.
Right.
But it made it up with more technicolor additions.
Now, there was a bird years ago, you and I were doing a show here, and there was a bird up in Vermont. It was a bunting of some kind. Was that the indigo bunting?
Probably.
That's also rare?
Well, it would be, especially even more so in Vermont, because it's a little further north. The painted bunting is a bird of the south. And I have a suspicion, because there have been an increasing number of reports of them in the last 10 years. I'm not talking about multiple reports, but just a few here and there. They started popping up in other places around the northeast. And like some of other bird, southern bird species, I'm going to keep an eye on this and see if there's a trend going on here starting up. And like with the cardinal, the mockingbird, the indigo bunting, and the Carolina wren, these southern birds that are now here, this may be some of the pioneers checking out the neighborhood.
Okay, and would eBird be a place where you can sort of keep track of these sort of things?
Absolutely. That's one of the real benefits of eBird, is that it does take note of these occurrences. And then over time, somebody can sit down and look at the repetitiveness, the repeat, the trend that might be showing up or not. You know, no is always a good answer.
The number here is 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Birding Today with Julie Hart and Rich Guthrie. Let's go to Claremont. It's Marcia's turn. Hello, Marcia.
Hello. Thank you so much for taking my call. Love the show.
Thanks.
I have a question about hummingbirds.
Okay.
So I followed the hummingbird tracker this year, and I got my hummingbird feeders out early, about maybe 2 weeks ago. Finally saw one last week, and it was a male, ruby-throated, and he was taking very, very deep, long drinks from the feeder. And I was wondering, is that because of coming just from the migration, or is it because of the cold weather? Do they end up needing to drink more because of the colder weather?
Yeah, I would say it's probably a little bit of both.
But it was very cold last weekend.
Yeah, I would say it's a little bit of both. So, definitely when they first arrive, they're very hungry because they just flew, you know, all night to get here. And then if it's colder or rainy like it is right now, they do tend to go for easy, reliable food sources. So that's when they tend to show up at the feeders and drink a bit more.
All right.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Appreciate it, Marcia. Thanks for the call. It's Birding Today with Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart. And the number is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Kim writes in, I've heard hummingbirds are very territorial, so I can understand why a male hummer would chase another male away from my feeder. But why would a male chase the females away? That's from Kim.
Sometimes that is not actually chasing. It may be part of their courtship routine.
She's playing hard to get.
Playing hard to get. And he's just being a pest.
Right.
And put it mildly. But yeah, and if it's not a mate, a paired or bonded female, he may also be protecting the territory against an intruding female.
I'm interjecting
that. I can't say for sure that that's part of it, but it could be part of the game.
We have to take a break here in a moment. The number is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart join us. Quickly, just before we hit the break, how much does the average small songbird weigh? I was up on the roof taking the air here at the station the other day, and these guys are little. I don't know what kind of bird they are. They're common here in Albany. This guy was a fatty. I mean, good heavens to Murgatroyd. How does he get off the ground? How much do birds weigh?
Good question. I'd have to go back on my records because they're all a little different, and there's a lot of variation mm-hmm. within the species and individuals. So, Ray, I'm not going to answer that one too easily for
Julie
you.
Julie Hart.
I would say the small songbirds, I think you're probably referring to a house sparrow, I'm
something
guessing.
Like that, yeah.
Probably around like 5 grams. Like they're very, very
wow,
light.
That is light.
Yeah.
But still very voluminous. I mean, it's a big rib cage there. The thing is, these birds, we have satellite dishes up on the roof. There are little holes in the mounting. They get in there and build their nests. I mean, there's about 3 different dishes, and there's about 3 or 4 different nests.
It sounds like the house sparrow. And, mm-hmm. and part of that bulkiness may be just fluffed up feathers. With this cold weather, what they do is they just sort of expand the airspace between the feathers to give them that feathered down feather insulation.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. This one had to shop at the Big and Tall store, okay? He was a biggie, or she. 800-348-2551. It's Birds, Rich Guthrie, and Julie Hart. We'll hit the phones in earnest coming up. That's Barney Kessel and the group coming home. 800-348-2551 is our number. Birds today with Julie Hart and Rich Guthrie. Rich is back in the studio for the first time in at least, 6 months, 7 months? You've been on the road, man.
Been away.
All right, so you have a list of events, son. We'd love to hear it.
Oh, sure. And speaking of hummingbirds.
Okay.
The Southern Adirondack Audubon, this evening, tonight at 7 p.m. at Saratoga Springs Library, they're going to be doing a program on hummingbirds.
Oh.
Hummingbirds are amazing. It's free, open to all, 7 p.m., Saratoga Springs Library. Moving on, we have on Saturday, a big day for a lot of birders and birding organizations around the region and the nation. It's Global Bird Day.
What?
People are encouraged to take notes, take data, and provide it to look it up. Global Big Day, is that...
Global Bird Day.
Global Bird Day.
No, yeah, Big Day.
And that also Saturday elsewhere is the World Series of Birding, and that goes on.
Oh, come on, the
yes,
World Series. Listen.
Ray?
No, that's ridiculous. I've seen the World Series of Bocce Ball out
yes,
in Rome,
well,
New York.
This is the World Series of Birding. It's been around for more than 25 years, and it's been going strong.
It's a big thing.
It's a big deal.
Big deal.
How do you
relax,
score
Ray.
It?
It's
no,
good.
No.
Oh, there's
no,
a whole set of rules.
No. Okay, so all right, we have to stop now. We'll get to the phones in a minute.
Honor system.
How do you score?
You just say you did, and you have a team of 5, and they all vouch for your sightings. And
this is rife with the possibility of dishonesty and cheating.
It doesn't go far. I mean, you don't get far because there are enough legitimate people out there who will judge and challenge, and sometimes they will require proof of like a photograph, like we sometimes do.
Yeah.
Here.
Mm-hmm.
And then also in the groups like the Alan DeVoe Bird Club of Columbia County, New York, use Saturday as their biggest fundraiser activity, and this is their big day,
okay,
the Birdathon, and you can know about that and participate that with alandevoebirdclub.org and learn about that.
Yeah.
The Capital Region Audubon Society is doing a walk on May 12th, that's Monday at 4 p.m.,
ah,
Peebles Island State Park, followed by, and this is important to a lot of our listeners, and that is bird window collision prevention, a little discussion about what to do, how to prevent it, a big problem that we have, and looking for answers. Also, coming up on Saturday at 6 a.m., for early risers, birds and breakfast at Five Rivers Environmental Education Center in Albany. Pardon?
What kind of breakfast?
Oh, there's going to be all sorts of gourmet delights.
Do you know this for a fact?
No. I mean, you expect the usual bagels and donuts and coffee.
You can't lie on the radio unless you're a politician. I mean, come on.
Good donuts.
All right.
That's at 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock or even 10:30 if you just want to show up.
Okay.
Saturday. And then we have tomorrow at 7 a.m., John Burroughs Natural History Society down in Kingston, New York, Spring Migration Bird Walk at Wallkill Valley, JBNHS, John Burroughs Natural History Society.org, 7 a.m. tomorrow. And Wednesday at 7 a.m. at Peach Hill in Poughkeepsie, New York, a similar Spring Migration Bird Walk.
Splendid.
Thursday, May 8th, yet one more for John Burroughs Natural History Society for folks further south in Kingston, New York, a nature walk at 8 a.m. And then the Allen Bird Club over there in Massachusetts on Thursday at 6 p.m., a rail trail evening walk, 6 p.m., South Amherst.
Who is Allen?
AllenBirdClub.org.
Who is Allen?
He's one of the founding members of the Allen Bird Club, of course.
Didn't have a last name, or was it Bird Club?
Well, yeah, Allen Bird Club.
Okay. Well, that was interesting. And is that it?
That's it.
Okay, because the show's over now. Good night, everybody. No, we'll go to the phones. 800-348-2551. It's Birds Today with Julie Hart and Rich Guthrie. And then there was Joan in Schenectady. Hello, Joan.
Hello, Ray. How are you? And hello, Julie, and hello, Rich. Good to have you in the studio, Rich.
Thank you.
I want to talk about mockingbirds.
Oh, okay.
We had three of them earlier, just a couple of weeks ago, not only doing song battle, but doing extremely violent physical battle with one another. So first question, is it only the males which sing all the other bird calls, or do the females get in on the singing too?
I believe it's all the males for mockingbirds.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
The male birds.
Okay. Cool. And what is the point of doing only 3 seconds worth of every different bird trill?
Oh, that's interesting.
Only
3 seconds?
Yeah, they'll do three repeats, and then they switch to the next song.
Wow.
So,
they weren't even doing three repeats. They were just going like, a mirage every 3 seconds. I was identifying another bird call.
It shows off their skills. So they can be like, look, I can imitate all of these different birds in this short amount of time. And it's like, I'm a really great singer.
Yeah, when I was
listening
to seagulls, when I knew there were no gulls around, I'm like, yeah, right.
Well, that's so fascinating. All right, Joan.
And I've never had three of them all at one time battling. I'm used to like two.
Mm.
But we were graced with three potential territory holders. So is that typical or like just we're lucky?
It depends on the habitat where you are. They like this like early successional kind of shrubby areas. And so if you have a lot of that habitat around, then yeah, you're more likely to have these fights going on.
All right.
Okay.
Well, Joan,
it was delightful.
Thank you so much for calling. 800-348-2551 is the number. How would someone like me, someone without discerning bird skills, know the difference between a mockingbird sound and the actual bird?
Just listen for a little while. When it switches to something else, you'll know that it wasn't it.
Well, I mean, I have a lot of birds. I mean, how do I know it's not, okay, well, that bird's here, and then he shut up for a minute, and somebody else did something else?
Well, the likelihood is the other bird will be at another place. So you just use your little directional finding and look at that shrub over there, and if it's a different bird, it will be over there.
They stay low in shrubs?
Well, top of a tree. I mean, top in the direction where the sound was coming from.
What do they look like?
Mockingbirds?
Yeah.
They're about a little smaller, about the size of a robin, all gray and very slender, long bill, long tail, and basically all gray with bright white flashes in the wing and the tail.
I'll be darned. I'm going to have to watch out for that. Let's go to Plainfield, Massachusetts. Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart join us. Emily is in Plain. Nope. Oh, I hit the wrong button. Emily, hang in there. Now we go to Merle in Argyle. Merle, you're lucky I hit the wrong button. Go ahead.
Now I feel privileged.
All right.
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
This is a follow-up from last time you were on, Rich and Julie. I don't know if either one of you did it, but did you contact Cornell University about the Red Wings and snow? And do you need a reminder about what that correlation is? It happened here. We didn't get snow after the Red Wings came.
Oh.
Okay.
Well, I did not look it up.
I don't know. Was there a question?
Last time I do remember.
We probably forgot.
He left
Merle.
Us with a question, and
I did
not look it up.
You know what?
This had to do with a woman that's been recording Red Wing arrivals and noticing that the amount of snow after a Red Wing comes is less than an inch. And she's been doing this for 40 years.
Wow. Well, that's just a coincidence, because I've seen plenty of times where Red Wings were around and there was 10 inches of snow. So
there might be confirmation bias at play there. But that's dedication / mania. I mean, if you do that for 40 years, right?
Well, yeah, and look over some data on the way. You just kind of like skip over it.
Merle, I got to be honest with you. You know, I do a lot of shows, and I barely remember yesterday, but I have no recollection of you bringing this up, although I remember you.
I didn't bring it up. Some other lady called in.
Oh.
And had.
Well, jeez. Why don't you wait for her to call?
And she said that she's been recording for 40 years.
Yeah, well, it depends on where she is.
Of Red Wings and then no snow after.
So she called this show. Maybe she'll,
March, April.
Maybe she'll call back, man. Just hang in there. This is an exciting show, yeah. Merle, I'm glad I hit the button by mistake, but now it's time to go. So long. Emily in Plainfield. Emily, you're on.
Hi, hello, Rich and Ray and somebody else.
Julie. She's here every month.
There's a great little Audubon site near my house that has a beaver pond, and I go there every spring to look for ducks. And I usually see them in pairs. But I was there last week, and I thought I saw two. They were either common or hooded merganser females. Like, I saw two ducks, and I'm like, I was trying to say, well, where's the male, where's the female? Would two female mergansers be hanging out together at the pond during mating season?
Well, likelihood is yes. And there's nothing unusual about that. Just yesterday, I saw four other species of mergansers down by my way, the red-breasted merganser, and they were all females. So they're either on their way. What happens is the males arrive on territory first, and the females kind of like show up later, and after a proper waiting amount of time, and there they are. So these two are probably en route to somewhere else, and either hooded or common mergansers may actually nest in that part of Massachusetts. So it could actually have been either of those two species.
Huh.
Yeah, I didn't have the book in hand, and so what always happens to me is I see them and I go, okay, Rufus had a little fuzzy on the back, blah, 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 and then I come home and look in the book and there's like three things that look like that, and I'm not sure which one I'm looking at.
Exactly. So
it'd
be either one of the two, hooded or common merganser. It actually could have been. And either one of them could have been hanging around and maybe nesting in the other. The other one will move on.
Okay.
Well, I might see, if I go back, I might spot the male, because with the wood ducks, sometimes I see one or sometimes the other, but I had never seen two females together, and I just wanted to, I thought that's what I was looking at, and I think you're telling me, yes, I probably was.
Indeed.
Okay, and Julie's nodding as well.
Thank you so much.
Emily, have a good one. Thanks for calling. 800-348-2551. Birds Today with Julie and Rich. And let's see, Charlene writes in. How does the Merlin app identify a mockingbird, given their propensity for imitation? Aha!
They've actually been bad lately. Yeah. We've been using it because sometimes there's brown thrashers,
okay,
and gray catbirds. And then there's a couple other species that will sometimes mimic as well. And I feel like Merlin, often it'll throw catbird, thrasher, and mockingbird on the same individual because it also has a hard time.
So how can they improve the app?
Just keep adding recordings. You can, using Merlin, add a recording to the database. And those repeated additions will help the logarithms sort out what they are.
Mm-hmm. All right, this is from Aiden in Rome, New York, home of the bocce ball World Series, right? Mm-hmm. Beautiful grounds there. You ever been? You ever checked
Rome,
it
New
out?
York, but of course.
It's very lovely. I've been seeing many migrating ducks, common mergansers and ringnecks, maybe hooded mergs too, question mark. But what else would be noteworthy sights? And that's from Aiden in Rome. Julie, you first.
Noteworthy, like birds?
I guess migrating ducks. I
mean. The migrating ducks. I always like to see blue-winged teal this time of year.
Yeah, and where do they start and where are they going? I mean, if they're moving through, are they up in Canada and they come?
Yeah, they're up in Canada, most of them around in the east. But where do they winter mostly? I don't actually
South
know.
South of us. I mean, there are plenty of them down in Texas and Alabama and Gulf
it's
of Mexico.
Strange. I mean, don't you think they should be in the south in the winter and then go
That's
up to...
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, they're going from the south to the north.
Yeah, exactly. They're going north. Yeah.
Understood. Yeah. All right, let's see. We'll go to 800-348-2551. Looks like Orange, Massachusetts. Ken is next. Hello, Ken, you're on.
Hey, how's it going?
Oh, pretty good.
Birds are great. I love birds. I actually live with five of them. I rescued a cockatoo, a macaw, and an African gray, and they're all middle-aged. But I really just wanted to ask you guys a question. Have you ever had a big year gone searching, you know, for all the birds you can identify in one year, just like that movie with Steve Martin and Jack Black?
I certainly have.
But yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. And it is kind of like a personal challenge. You do it with solo or with a team of others. And I've participated on these big days, birdathons, World Series, and a personal quest of my own. So yeah, that's a thing. It's what you do,
Pretty
you know.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've done big days.
What'd you say, Julie?
I've done big days, and I've also done like within a county or within a state, but I haven't done like all of the U.S. or all of North America.
Would you like to someday?
Well, I don't know. It's very expensive.
It sure is. Isn't that a shame?
It's not on my dance card.
Unless you're going to hop a freight, you know, a freight car and you just
I'd rather
hobo.
Travel somewhere exotic and see lots of birds that I've never seen before.
Which you've done.
Which I do. Yes, I do this. So that's
Ken, you ever have a big year yourself?
No. I just live with birds, and that's quite enough, yeah.
I dig it, man. Thanks for the call, 800-348-2551. Let's grab one more, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll do it again. Who's next, our next victim? Oh, Dave in Bird Hills. Dave, you're on.
Here we go.
Yes.
Hello.
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 Hi.
So we have a wood frame screened-in porch that the birds like to hang out on the screens, and it looks like they're trying to get inside, and sometimes they do. We don't know how they get in. I'm just wondering, why are they hanging out? Why do they want to get in, and how can I discourage them? Thinking about maybe one of those big plastic owls or something.
Well, you can forget about the big plastic owl thing, because that does not work. It may work for a few seconds, but they catch on fast.
Yeah.
I'm going to guess that it's probably bird species that's after any spiders that may have gathered on the screen, and the Carolina wren and the house sparrow are both notorious for doing that sort of thing. And I wouldn't say that it's a congregation of them, but they're repeated performances, yes. And maybe a pair or two might be working together when it comes to the house sparrow.
It could be very annoying on your porch.
I
We've had that
it could
issue
be annoying.
Too. Yeah.
On my porch, it's not annoying. I enjoy them being there, and they're very clever. They come up to they know where the spider webs are. The spider may retreat to its little cubby hole, But leftovers are still out there, and they help themselves as time goes on.
Julie?
Interesting. Thank you.
He also asked about how do they get in.
Yeah.
And they can get in through very small holes, much smaller than you might be expecting.
Yeah, Carolina wren especially.
They have
propensity for doing that.
Yeah, the wrens, they'll try to nest inside as well. They'll try to get in any little nook and cranny and try to nest. So even if it looks like a hole that's too small, they could still be getting in.
And once they're inside, they sometimes have a hard time finding the exit door.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so then it's up to you to kind of like open the door and make an...
Unless you have a house cat. And then it's all over.
Oh.
Right.
Oh, you should have seen Rich wince just now, Dave.
Well, if it's a house cat and kept indoors, a lot of forgiveness there.
Okay. Yep. Right. Okay. Fair enough. Let's take a break. Enough with this violence. 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie, Julie Harder here. It's Braids. We'll be back. A number of years ago, John Scofield did an album, just Ray Charles covers, and that's Sticks and Stones from the album. I think it's called, the album is called, That's What I Say, I believe. The great John Scofield here on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. It's me, Ray Graff. It's them, Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart. And it's you, it's Birds today. Just a statement, says the subject heading from Anthony. Saw the first hummingbird of the season this morning. It may be time to put the hummingbird feeders out, but bring them indoors at night. The bears are out and about now, too.
Mm-hmm.
You agree?
Good point. Yes.
What do the hummingbirds do at night?
They cuddle up.
Yep.
Curl
up.
High up in a tree, in the ground. Where do they hang?
In vegetation.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say they'd look for a nice, tight corner in a tree and just hang out there. Maybe.
Mm-hmm. High up, though, low?
Depends. I don't know.
Aha! All right. Well, that's your homework for the next time. Let's go to Ed in Albany. Ed, go ahead.
Hi, thank you very much. I do a lot of bicycling, and frequently I'm way out in the country and hear a lot of birds. And I was out in the Midwest, and I heard I'm pretty sure it was a red-winged blackbird, but it was making a sound like a truck backing up. And I heard another red-winged blackbird, I think, doing the same thing not too long after. I'm wondering, the birds have like local dialects.
Very much
yes.
So. And in fact, there's some very interesting work that has been done on those dialects. And I'll go specifically to the mountain regions of California, where you have sedentary populations of the white-crowned sparrow. And you could go from one valley to another and hear a different dialect in there. And that transforms across the nation, where the red-winged blackbirds of Washington State will sound. You can recognize it. You know that's a red-winged blackbird, but it sure sounds different than the red-winged.
Do they have flat A's out in the Midwest?
Up in Boston, more likely.
Okay. Ed, you want to follow up?
Yeah, another quick question. Something I've experienced twice, and somebody else told me they experienced it, and I'm wondering what kind of behavior it is. But I'm biking along, like, you know, in the woods on a trail or something like that, and I've had, like, goldfinches like bounce alongside me for like long extended rides, like I'm wondering for like a half mile they'll just follow me.
Wow.
A couple of them, and I'm wondering, are they enjoying themselves, are they leading me away from a nest, what's that all about?
Julie, what do you think?
Gosh, I don't know. My initial thoughts are like, okay, is it after food, or I don't know. They eat seeds, so that doesn't make sense, so I'm not sure.
What do you think, Rich?
I'm with Julie on that. Ed, I can't relate to that. Not being a long-distance bicycle rider, I've never had that happen to me while I'm walking.
I mean, you talk to the birds. You have them. They sit on your shoulder.
Yeah,
and
bird brain type of thing. But
goldfinches are pretty, like, active and happy and kind of, like, playful.
Yeah.
But it still seems odd that they would follow you for
maybe
that
you're
far.
Special, Ed.
Yeah,
I was going to ask some personal questions, but we won't go there.
All right, man. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. We'll keep on that one. Let's go to Linda in Galway. Linda, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good, welcome.
Listen, I just wanted to say that I was fortunate enough today to see, not once, but twice, a scarlet tanager at my feeder.
Wow.
Wow.
Is that good?
Beautiful, beautiful. That orange and black is just, I froze, yeah.
It's one of the most beautiful birds we have. You know, we don't deserve things like that, but we got them and appreciate them while they're here. The scarlet tanager is one of those. Tanagers, as a family, are a tropical group, very colorful down in the tropics, and this is our representative of that beautiful bunch of birds.
Yes. So I wanted to share that and hope that everybody else gets to see one. Maybe there's a new trend.
I hope so.
Yeah, I have not seen one.
Our way.
Although I'm not sure, Julie, if I would know one. You're kind of in my neighborhood.
Oh, it'd stick right out. The orange would stick right out in the summer. Yeah, orange and black.
Well, you know, the incredible thing is that up in the treetops, they're almost invisible because that's where they usually hang out. So you're very fortunate that it was at eye level, that way you can get a good look at them.
You haven't seen one over there on your end of town?
So we have them singing in the trees near us, but they don't come into feeders. Scarlet tanagers are red, like a bright, almost like a neon red.
Oh,
like,
cool.
Like this color of this coffee cup here.
You wouldn't mistaken it for a cardinal.
No, and they have black wings, super black wings.
So red body, black wings.
Yes.
What about the head?
Red.
Wow.
They have a distinctive song, and they have a very peculiar phrase in the song to phonetically put it. It sounds like it's saying chick burr, mixed in with the song. And when you get to know that, you'll know to look up and search through the foliage. The female scarlet tanager, incidentally, is just drab olive green.
Mm-hmm.
She blends in with the leaves even more so. But despite his red colors, the male is difficult to see up there.
Well, okay. The number here is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. D writes in, I'm wondering what the order of the morning symphony is. I hear the first guy around 3 a.m. He sings alone for a while, then little by little others join until they wake up the whole neighborhood. Not complaining, just interested. And that's from D in Albany. So who's first? Who starts that symphony real early in the morning?
Actually, the early bird is usually the robin.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the other ones are started, and some of those birds will sing during the wee hours of the morning.
Right.
One of the things I like to do with my Merlin app is to turn it on and leave it on the windowsill with the window open, and it will pick up the sounds of the birds through the night and let me know in the morning who was out there at midnight singing his heart out.
Do you do that, Julie?
I don't do that, but... I just wanted to add that that we were talking about mockingbirds earlier,
yeah.
And they're one of the species that will sing all night in the middle of the night.
Ah.
So
they've earned a reputation for that.
Yes.
That cat howling is kind of like two of the things that spring brings.
Okay, 800-348-2551. That's the number. We'll go to Kinderhook now, and it's hello, Phyllis. You're on.
Hey, hello there. I just heard... you mentioned a few minutes ago about bird collisions.
Yeah.
And I was piqued my interest because a couple weeks ago I was driving on I-90 and, you know, the speed limit 65. And I was startled by this big noise on the passenger side. And some bird... dark feathered, flew past my windshield. I tried to see if he kept flying or if I had hit him so hard, he was hurt. And it wasn't until a couple weeks later that I noticed my passenger side headlight was smashed completely, and the fender... had a big dent in it. I'm interested in hearing when you do a show about bird collisions, but do you have any idea, could that have been a hawk?
Could have been. Unfortunately, I hit a hawk one time, and it shattered my windshield.
Yikes.
That's what I thought. I thought, my goodness, if it ever hit my windshield, I might have had an accident.
I did say that. I will say that I stopped the car and I went back, and the hawk was fine.
Ah.
What it was the squirrel that he was carrying was what actually did the damage, I think. Anyway, I sat there for a while, and after a while, it started eating the squirrel and then flew off. So
delicious.
Well, see, I couldn't stop. I was in traffic.
No, I understand.
And that's quite an expensive fix. I just had the estimate as my insurance company came out today.
Oh, boy.
No way to avoid that, correct?
No, rule of thumb is carry on. Don't try avoidance if a situation like that comes up. That could lead to an unexpected image.
Phyllis, thanks so much for the call. Go ahead, Julie.
I just wanted to add about the collisions thing that the Cornell Lab of Ornithology is doing a free webinar next week that anyone can sign up for. And they will be talking in great detail about how to prevent window collisions. So that would be birds that are like hitting the windows
house.
Of your house
yeah.
or something. So if people are interested, they could look that
Fair
up.
Fair enough. You know, I wonder, sometimes people, and I don't know if they work or not, but they'll put those little sound devices on the front of their cars
you
to keep deer away.
The deer things.
I wonder if it works on the birds.
It's hard to document whether the bird just happened to fly away, or didn't make it.
Yeah.
And attribute it to one of those devices. And that's the same thing that happened with the deer things. I mean, it turns out that they really don't seem to work.
All right, let's go to Paul in Montague, Mass. Paul, you're on.
Hi, thank you. My question is going to be repeating about mockingbirds, I guess, but there was a discussion of the mockingbirds doing their covers of all the other birds.
Right.
A week or so ago, I observed a mockingbird that was answering the other species. And, you know, I know the other species well enough. There was a cardinal, there was a titmouse, blackbird. And you'd hear that in the distance, and then the mockingbird would go and repeat it. And then, you know, and it just went on for like several minutes. It just kept. And what I wondered is, has anybody done any research on the evolutionary sort of role that ability to mimic the other birds provides to the mockingbird and the other mimic bird?
I find that fascinating, too.
They've definitely done studies looking at how many other sounds a mockingbird can imitate and how long it takes them to go through their whole repertoire, and then correlating that with how successful they are in nesting and raising young. Correct me if I'm wrong, Rich, that the more songs that they know, they can have like up to 500 songs that they're imitating,
mm-hmm.
The more successful they are.
Interesting.
Right. That's the general trend. But how that evolved is a question. It's an intriguing question. And you know that it's not that widespread among different bird species. If it were a real successful technique, you would think more birds would have adopted it over the millennia.
Yeah.
And it's not doesn't seem to be the case. Even among mockingbird relatives, the northern mockingbird seems to be the champion in that realm, and others are just poor imitators. They're on to something, and they're not sharing the secret with us.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. Now we head out to LaGrange. Dave is on. Dave, go ahead. You only got a couple of minutes here.
That's okay. I'm going to be quick. I just have a question for the panel. I love the show, by the way.
Oh, thanks.
So I've been trying to get orioles to come to the yard, and I put an oriole feeder out, and for 3 years I got them faithfully every year. Last year, didn't see one. So far this year, haven't seen one. I'm just trying to figure out if there's something else I can do or if I'm doing something wrong.
I don't think you're doing anything wrong. It's just the nature, it's unfortunate nature, what I believe to be of the world that orioles and other songbirds live in. And it's an arduous journey. It's very dangerous. It's very taxing. And the toll is oftentimes on your local population of the songbird. The local population comes back to where they were. If something happens to that group of birds, one or all, then you're going to lose that local population until you get some other pioneers to come resettle that territory.
Mm. Nice.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, all right. Well, okay.
It's all the more reason why we need to work on saving the habitat and enhancing their survival rate.
Well, let me just quick one more thing. Do you think there's anything to the fact that I have other feeders near the Oriole feeder? Is that a good idea or a bad idea?
I don't think it matters.
I will say, so my Oriole feeder is like in the middle of all of my other feeders. And I do notice mm-hmm. that the Oriole is a little scared and reluctant to come down when there's a lot of other birds around. So you may try to move it away a little bit just to see if that helps. I think having it kind of near but not like right next to or in the middle of feeders is good.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. By the way, Roman wrote in, just wanted to second an earlier caller's comment about having goldfinches following him while cycling. I can confirm this has happened to me multiple times, especially alongside fields with tall grasses. They look like they're having a lot of fun swooping alongside me on the road. Sounds dangerous.
Going to have to get on the bike.
I'm like picturing like yellow dolphins.
Bow riding.
All right, well, listen, we're about out of time. Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart, thank you so much for being with us today. Rich, if people want to contact you, how do they do it?
My name, Richard, with a middle initial P as in Peter, Guthrie@gmail.com. No spaces, no dots, no dashes.
It's all one continuous flow.
Lovely flow.
What do you think, Julie? Do you want anyone to contact you, or do you like to remain anonymous? Really?
No, it's fine. My email address is julie.hart@dc.ny.gov.
Fantastic. Well, thank you both. We'll see you next month. Support comes from Dwoleski's Tree Planting and Transplanting, NYSA-ISA certified arborist, planting native trees and shrubs with various sized tree spade equipment for transplanting in Columbia, Dutchess, and Capital District, DwoleskiTree.com. At Mountain Laurel Waldorf School, New Paltz, focused on clear thinking, balanced emotions, empathy for all, and a love of meaningful work, now enrolling parent-child through 8th grade, mountainlaurel.org. Well, thanks again for being here. Thanks to Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart, Zach Malloy, our engineer, Ed Rosen screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, we welcome back UAlbany physicist Kevin Knuth to talk about UFOs. You might want to call him UAP. This guy's at the forefront of scientific research. We'll do that tomorrow at 2. You know, it's Listener Appreciation Week here at WAMC, and we're calling it Your Station, Your Stories. So right after this theme is done, right after Basie kicks it, we're going to hear one of the voices that keeps this station strong. And remember, your story counts too. Give us a call. Make that pledge, 800-323-9262. See you. We'll do UFOs tomorrow.